2-2 pitch to Williams. Swings here and hits the ball well out the deep center, chasing Pena back to the warning track. You can say goodnight to it! Right over the 405 mark, the deepest part of UFC Udish Park Field. And Cam Williams has put an exclamation point on this super regional with a big fly, a two-run bomb to make it 11-4 Texas. Nation.
Longhorns heading to the College World Series for the 37th time in program history. Thanks in large part to Cam Williams and really their whole offense, which was fantastic yesterday and did everything they needed to do on Saturday to get that win, including Eric Kennedy with the walk-off to score Silas Ardoin. That was Craig Way with the call. He had some great calls, and it was just one of those classic weekends for the University of Texas Athletics. We got the All-American, Rod Babers. We got the MVP, Brad Kellner. I'm Kevin Dunn. We do have another All-American, freshman All-American, Pete Hansen, was just named to one of those teams, and Pete didn't even have to go this weekend. So we'll see how they're going to play their pitching out and really how that's going to work out for the rest of, obviously, the College World Series. So they can play around with that a little bit, but they're going to be rested, they're going to be confident, and they're going to be ready to go as they take on the winner of Notre Dame, Mississippi State. That game is going to start in a little less, or just around an hour from now. That'll be winner take all. So we'll keep you updated on that. Before we get back to Texas baseball here, did get a tweet from one of our favorites, Chris Bennett, and we were talking at the break, just random stuff that we've eaten before. And he said in high school I had fried alligator at the Texas Renaissance Festival and it tasted like chicken. I had alligator at the Cotton Bowl. Used to have these couple Louisiana guys, mm-hmm. and they would have gator, and I tried gator.
They
there
fry it?
They do it they a couple it? Different ways. They grill it, they yeah. fry it, they had no. different ways, but yeah. they had their own marinade to go with it. Mm-hmm. It was really good. It takes on whatever the flavor that you're adding to it. Totally so this agree. Tasted, it was like a teriyaki marinade, so it was right up my alley.
No, gator's actually pretty damn good. And it's more readily available. You can go to Papado's and go get gator.
Yeah.
You know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got fried gator at Papado's.
I guess they eat us a lot, so it's only fair that we eat
them. It's like me eating shark. I had no problem with that, right? Yeah. The whale thing, I'm not going to touch the whale because they're going to spit me out.
I love whales, man. Whales are cool creatures.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they sell insurance too, which is pretty cool.
Wrong one, but
shout
yeah.
out. There you go.
Isn't that them?
That's not them.
That's why we should move on.
Let's move on. Let's get to what was a whale of a game. Whale of a series. That was Texas and South Florida. We expected the crowd to have a big impact, and yes, the crowd had a huge impact, but there's just something about this Texas team and the resiliency they have. After the two home runs in the ninth on Saturday, look, South Florida has all the momentum at that point. And whatever Jasiak and those guys had dealt with where it looked like the crowd was getting to them early in that game, that went away. Mm-hmm. All the mo is with them. And for Texas to answer like they have all year long, you get the quick two outs, you get an error on the shortstop, Ardoin's at first. And then Eric Kennedy's up there. He's looking for a fastball, drops the bat head down, and Roberto Pena playing just a little too shallow in that big center field. Texas walks it off. At that point, it felt like Sunday is going to be a party, and BK, South Florida, better come out with more than just two like they did, because that was 6-2
yeah.
after the third.
Yeah, I'll give South Florida some credit, right? I mean, what happened to them on Saturday could have been absolutely demoralizing.
Yeah.
And they could have just flat out laid an egg on Sunday, but they got off to a good start. They took advantage of some control issues from Tristan Stevens, which we don't see that very often, right?
Don't.
Stevens has been awesome this year, and the one thing he's done better than anything else is throw strikes.
Mm-hmm.
He's had great command of the zone all season long. Didn't have that, especially early yesterday. Walked two guys, hit a guy in the first inning, then gave up a two-run single. So I'll give South Florida credit for coming out with a bang, but, and Texas, resilient. We've seen it time and time again this season. They're a resilient bunch, and they have each other's back. So Tristan Stevens has picked up his offense a number of times this year, and yesterday it was the opposite, right? His offense picked him up, a four spot in the second, and then two more in the third, and after that it was a long party at the dish, because you kind of knew the writing was on the wall and Texas was going to find a way to get it done.
Yeah, and the way that, you know, they responded to Tristan Stevens struggling early, immediately, right in the second inning, and then infused him with confidence. And then he struggled again a little bit later on, too.
Yeah, he did.
And he just admitted, I just didn't have my stuff. And you saw the difference in you know, South Florida, right? They came out hot. They got to their what? They got to their bullpen about the second inning.
Mm-hmm.
Got to their third pitcher around the third or the fourth inning. I mean, they had to get deep into it. That's the advantage that you talk about with Texas. That even if Tristan Stevens is struggling, he can still get you to the fifth, still get you to the sixth. Then you can hit up a Cole Quintanilla. Then you can bring in, you know, the other guys. So
and
you know,
Nixon was just to get work
Aaron
again.
Nixon just to get
that's
one,
all he's had in the NCAAs.
One, two, three. Yeah, and get it out. So that once again, you see the separation between Texas and the other teams. Of course, they deserve their number two overall ranking and the highest ranked seed going into the College World Series into Omaha. But you start looking at it, and you know they're man, they got guys that are performing at a really high level. You just talked about Eric Kinney. I think he's batting .330. In the postseason.
He has. He's been a lot better. And it's not just infield singles, which was primarily a lot of what his average was, even when his average throughout the season was not where he wanted it. BK, you had said that, yeah, these guys don't walk a lot, but you expected a lot of walks. You got 12 yesterday from the South Florida staff. They hit two guys. They had two wild pitches. You had Texas guys that were frustrated. I love Trey Faltini's energy. The first time he got hit, that's a slider that hits you on the ass. These guys aren't trying to hit you.
Mm.
I understand that you're just upset at the situation, and like Cam Williams a week ago, you're just tired of getting hit. I get it. But that's one of those where I wanted to make sure no one gets thrown out. You don't want any suspensions, and just take your base. So he got hit later on the next time at the plate and was barking again at the pitcher, and that's when O'Sullivan, their catcher, said, hey, that's enough. We're not trying to hit you, man.
They need some of that spider tech stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they were losing control, man. They needed some.
They
grip.
Were.
Yeah, they were. It looked like it.
They were throwing behind guys.
Yeah, it looked really bad. I mean, early on.
Yeah, exactly. I get the frustration, and no one wants to get hit, so I understand that, but they weren't trying to hit you.
No, I don't think so. They just didn't have commands.
Right.
And once again, being in that atmosphere, it's a little bit different for the South Florida pitchers. That's a young bunch, too. And, man, South Florida exhausted all of its arms yesterday.
Quick, fast.
So if they somehow, some way would have found a way to come back and win that game, they would have nothing for Game 3. Like, I don't know what they would have done for a game today because all of their best bullpen pieces and their third starter were inserted into the game yesterday. So they tried to pull out all the stops, but obviously it wasn't enough to come back and take down Texas. But, man, that was fun. Really, really fun to be a part of. And the walks didn't care for too much just because it was hot. There was no breeze at all at the dish. Thank God that was a night game, too. Like, I wonder if people... Nobody would have left the game early if it was during a day game, but, man, there would have been some frustrated Longhorn fans if there were 12 walks during a summer day game where it's 100 degrees outside and everyone's just roasting. thankfully, we had a night game, which helped that a little bit. But, it's... Texas was a beneficiary of that, and some clutch hits too. I mean, some clutch hits by the Longhorns. They made it happen when they needed to.
Even when they didn't get stuff done. So I've talked about this all year, and the base running really wasn't bad this weekend. But get your bunts down when you have to get your bunts down, because that will be a game against Tennessee or Mississippi State or Notre Dame, and it's 4-3, and you will look back at Trey Faltini not getting the bunt down. Now, he butcher boys with two strikes and shoots one into right center that really, really got that top of the second thing rolling. So I love that. Get your bunts down. You have no excuse. Doug Hodo missed one. That is going to come back and bite them in the ass if they don't fix that.
Yeah, you get away with that stuff against South Florida.
You do.
You don't get away with that stuff against some national seeds in Omaha. So hopefully they can figure it out, but you've been saying it for months, KD. If this team does have a downfall or a weakness, it's their inability to get bunts down and some mishaps on the base paths.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't come back to bite them. Hell, this team, they played in one close game thus far in the postseason. But yeah, you're going to play a lot more closer games at TD Ameritrade. You've got to make sure the little details are taken into account. And you're buttoned up, and you're dotting your T's and crossing your I's. No, I think you do the other way around, right? You dot your I's and you cross your T's.
No, I do it the other way.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, your handwriting
makes the
terrible.
T and I.
Dotting T's. Yeah. It looks like I am.
It just switches up.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let's hear from Zach Zubia, though. After the game last night, he was on with Craig and Keith, and he talked about the team making it back to the College World Series.
I mean, I think it just shows the dedication of this team's work ethic and this team's mentality and this team's fierceness. I mean, everything we do is with intent. Everything we do is with teamwork and camaraderie. And, you know, I just can't thank enough to the team, the coaches, the fans. They've been nothing but great all year. And, you know, we're not done yet. That's the biggest thing now is that we're not done yet, and We got to go win some more games out there in Omaha.
So Zach Zubia says we're not done yet, and it feels like he's got a chance to be right. The Longhorns, the highest remaining seed left in the College World Series, and they can make it happen, guys.
They can. They have as good of a shot of anyone who's up there right now. And I've seen Texas up there in 2000 or 2014 when they got a lot farther than I thought they would. When I looked at the talent and I looked at the makeup of the team and I thought, guys, you did everything you could to get us there. It's all icing right now. I don't feel like it's icing. This feels more like 02, 05, 04 even, when 09, when you looked at it and you said, I think this team's going to make a run to that championship series. And look, Vanderbilt is loaded, and I talk about the unfair rule that's in college baseball with private schools compared to state schools. And look, it's not like Corbin's cheating. That is allowed, so that's something that the NCAA at some point needs to legislate and hopefully just open that up for state schools, because I want as many of these kids to get rides as possible. I just want competitive balance, and it needs to be fair, at least heading into the process. Vanderbilt doesn't have Texas pitching depth. Their third guy, 40% of the losses this year were with their Sunday guy. So we'll see if Vanderbilt can get there, because they're on the other side of the bracket, but they're going to have problems once they get past Kumar Rocker, who also, his velo has not been the same as it was last year. I mean, Rocker's really damn good. He's probably going to be a top 10 pick. I think Leiter's probably the best pitcher coming into this thing. But this is not your just incredibly loaded Vanderbilt team, and certainly not with pitching. I got questions about their bullpen, guys. So Vanderbilt on the other side is going to be competitive. Tennessee's really good. They've hit a ton of home runs. Tennessee's top 10 in the country in home runs. They've hit 98 home runs. One thing that's going to be an adjustment for them that won't be for Texas is, man, the ball flies out in Knoxville, and especially in day games. It flies out of that ballpark.
I think they hit 12 of their 98 home runs yesterday.
Yesterday, right. It does not fly out at TD Ameritrade. So offensively, you got to be a little bit more versatile and find ways to score in different ways and not just rely on the home run, which is not going to be how your bread is buttered there.
Didn't they build that ballpark the wrong way?
Yes, they did.
That hurts.
Yeah.
That's bad.
And I found out from the mayor, the unofficial mayor.
Jeff Cross?
Of Omaha.
The mayor of left field?
No.
Oh.
Different mayor. Kyle Peterson. When we were working up there, and I said, man, I really miss Rosenblatt. He goes, well, this would be fine if they would have built it the right way. I go, what do you mean? He said, well, they wanted to build it where you could see the convention center, which is, such a big draw when you're watching that you can see the convention. They acted like it'd be like the Golden Gate Bridge behind it. I go, all right, relax. This is not that you did that knowing that in the summer it's going to be blowing in. Bad bit.
Convention center.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, when I'm at DKR, I do complain. I actually tweet Chris Del Conte every time I'm there. Hey, can you open up a spot so I can see the convention center,
right,
please? Because that's really what I want.
Actually, I'd like to see the cemetery.
You guys are joking, but Austin, a lot of the laws about building and restrictions have been based on sight.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Being able to see
the
Capitol.
Still right there.
Being able to see the tower. Yeah, so I know you guys are making fun of it.
Yeah, but those
Austin,
are cool.
Austin actually operates just like that.
Oh, I'm preaching to the choir, man. Preaching to the choir.
But those are cooler than a convention center.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I'm well,
just
yeah.
Saying,
and
that for where's Omaha? Where's this place at you guys are talking about?
Nebraska? Omaha, Nebraska?
Is it Omaha?
Yeah.
That's probably one of the key fixtures there. One of the key elements to Omaha, Nebraska. I've never been, so I can't say.
It is. And Omaha's a pretty fun town, but that's not the draw. That's not the selling point. It's a convention center.
Is it a cool looking convention center?
No! You know what it looks like? A convention center.
Some convention centers are cooler looking than others.
Give me one convention center you think is cool.
I don't go to convention centers.
I want you to rabbit hole on
that
tonight.
The one in Miami Beach. Whatever one that is.
Okay, that probably
I'm
is
sure
pretty
it's pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah, that probably is
there
pretty
you
cool.
go.
Because you have a view of the beach.
Right.
That's the only way it's cool.
Exactly.
That's all you get.
That's true.
Hey, you want a better view? How about Sharp Vision Modern LASIK?
Boom!
They're going to get you that 20/20. I got down to 2015.
Nice.
BK got down to 2010. God knows what he was looking at with that 2010 last night. Stop putting off the LASIK. Get to Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. Incredibly friendly people. You take that free consultation. Essentially, it's a free eye exam. I'm not sure they want me to tell you that, but that's the truth. So if anything else is going on for free, you're going to find out about that. But more importantly, you're going to find out if you qualify for LASIK. It's starting at $495 per eye. You get guaranteed financing approval. It's 512-596-2020. 512-596-2020. Sharpvision.com. Sharp with an E, -vision.com. It's Sharp Vision Modern LASIK, the official LASIK provider of Austin FC.
And Texas baseball is such a fun team to root for.
They're such a likable team.
Such a likable team this year, but just being a fan of the most storied program in the sport is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, the 37 trips to Omaha is ridiculous, and what I haven't heard enough of today is the fact that the team that's second place on that list has 25.
Is that Miami?
It's Miami. Okay. So Texas has a 12-appearance lead over any other school in the country in terms of trips to Omaha. And the Longhorns have 85 College World Series wins, which is more than a dozen more than anybody else, and they've got a chance to add to that, too. So, yeah, this team's really likable, really fun. The coaching staff is likable. The players are likable. Such a close-knit group, and they care about this fan base. But, man, it's pretty cool rooting for the best team in the sport. That's nice. That's nice to brag about.
It is, and I've always thought that that plays into the pride in the atmosphere that you get out there, that there is an understanding that, you know what, this is the top dog. And if you talk to coaches around the country, they will tell you that, which was actually frustrating when they put a cap on hiring. It looks like we got the right hire, so that's awesome in David Pierce. But, Rod, there's just a different pride that you get with baseball fans because they do understand everything he just said. It's number one in everything by a mile except for national championships where there are two.
Yeah.
So there's an understanding of just how historic and awesome this program is, and people take more pride into that, as they should.
No question. And when you throw into the mix the overall atmosphere and the culture that's developing with Texas baseball, I mean, it's still an evolving tradition. You talk about there's a lot of tradition there, of course, a lot of history there, but the tradition is still evolving.
Right.
All right, Occupy Left Field is a big part of that.
Pena was out there with me as a little kid.
Yeah, right.
And we were maybe going to a U-Haul, and you had the Wild Bunch, and then he took that with Jeff and said, no, we're going to take this out to left field. So it's a great point. It is still evolving.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I'll throw out there that, just from a kind of a baseball novice perspective, I do like the fact that this team is in the postseason. Man, they've been scoring.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been hitting. I think a big part of it, we know they're really deep. Pitching staff is deep. Bullpen loaded as well. We've been talking about that. That's how they win, defense and pitching. But the reason I think they get the blowouts is because, as you talked about, KD, yeah, we know the usual suspects who've been hitting well consistently all year long. Ivan Melendez, Mitchell Daly's been great. Cam Williams in there, too. Zach Zubia, actually, too, has been pretty consistent. But now you're getting your Eric Kennedys, who was starting to round in the form, and Tico starting to get hot at this time.
Faltini.
Yeah.
Faltini is his bat looks good.
Yeah,
right,
and that's what you talked about. You're like, man, that's when they're going to look really dangerous. That's when you start talking about a team that can make a run in the College World Series. That's what we're witnessing.
Yeah. We are.
Just like you talked about weeks ago, it's happening right now, peaking at the perfect time.
And the bats struggled in Oklahoma City, right? In the Big 12 tournament, Texas didn't score more than four runs in any of their four games up
47
there.
47 strikeouts?
So if there was a concern or a question mark about this club going into regional play, it was, okay, what's going on with the bats? And they have absolutely delivered.
So Ivan Melendez, David Pierce said, good postgame, too. It was cool to be able to have that. And that's one of the things I love about regionals, that right after that, I was like, all right, I'm tired, but I'm going to lay down and I'm going to listen to this post game. And as I'm laying down, I thought, no, I'm going to rewatch this game. So, of course, I literally rewatched the game right
and
after.
And then you rewatched it again.
Yeah.
So you watched three times
today.
All right?
Yeah.
There you go.
So
you got a girlfriend yet, Katie?
No, I don't. And guess what? I don't have any clues. Mom can't figure it out. I can't figure it out. There's just nothing in front of me. It could be stuff like that.
Coming off COVID, it's tough.
Yeah.
I guess you'll get back into dating. It's been a while since everybody what's the last date you went on?
Well, I didn't say I haven't gotten laid.
What? You can't go from just banging it out to girlfriend and just skipping steps. You gotta get to a relationship, commit to the person, and then boom.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like the whale.
Katie doesn't go
just
out.
Just spit it out.
So, BK, you went on a date? Have you been on a date since COVID?
I think so.
Over?
A couple of them.
There you go. See, he's going on dates. You can go on a date.
He had an amazing weekend during COVID that was legendary.
Don't get him in trouble.
Yeah. I already ratted myself out.
Yeah, on the air.
All right.
He gave that. Hey, Melendez, so David Pierce did say after the game that Ivan's not seeing the ball well. That would be, look, and that not all 1-9, even the national championship teams in 02 and 05, not everyone was seeing the ball well. It's rare that that happens, but if you get him kind of just seeing the ball better and seeing it the way he was before, because he is chasing breaking balls and people are obviously trying to tie him up inside with those long arms and that reach. But if you get him going, that's really going to change things. I'm just praying and knocking on wood that he's going to come back. Maybe he's got to go talk to the people at Sharp and just get a little tune-up. But how about Peyton Powell, who's a good young left-handed hitter? And we've talked about Powell and some of the other guys. For him to come in and 2-0, spit on a couple balls and get a fastball low and in and shoot it back up the middle with two outs and a guy on third, whew, I love seeing that.
That was really, really cool to see. Everybody contributed last night, and everyone has contributed all season long, and Texas is headed back to Omaha for the 37th time in school history, 12 more than any other program in college baseball. The College World Series starts on Saturday. We'll have every game for you right here on the Horn.
They've been to Omaha 35 more times than A&M's won there.
Mm. Wow. Nice Aggie fact.
I'm surprised it took him that long nice to throw Aggie that dig fact. In, honestly.
Oh, I got wow. all week.
Well done there.
I've got like all
a,
week.
You know, man, Kyle would have come up with that one. That's a nice little Aggie stat. All right, let's get to some Roch rant of the day. The NFL, I'm going to say it, NFL is becoming a little bit more progressive about a certain subject. Times, they are changing. We'll address that on the other side. All of that and more in Roch rant of the day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. And I saw this tweet from Stefania Bell. She's actually a physical therapist, reporter, injury reporter with ESPN. She tweeted this out about the NFL. She said the NFL Players Association put out a request and basically are holding kind of an open, kind of a science, if you will, experiment. It is kind of an open science fair. Sounds strange, but the NFL is looking for alternatives to opioids, and they are looking for potential pain management alternatives to opioids. So within this topic, they have also addressed the effects of CBD and cannabis and cannabinoids on pain management and athletic performance. We know that the NFL has finally decided to relax its penalties as relates to marijuana as a recreational drug. But now the NFL actually may be interested in the scientific steps and the scientific leaps that have been made recently with medicinal marijuana and CBD, which could be an alternative to prescribing opioids to players, which, by the way, there's a long, and we got to get into the history of this because this is, you know,
say, were there any of us mentioned talking about this 10 years ago when they laughed it off?
Yeah, I think everybody was talking about this, something the NFL should be looking into. And you're right, the NFL drug their feet. I mean, the NFL was one of the last, and I know technically the NBA actually has a harsher marijuana policy, I guess, than the NBA does.
Technically they do,
but the NBA has decriminalized marijuana. You test, that's why no guys get really suspended in NBA for testing positive for marijuana, because you have to test positive, I want to say like 4 or 5 times before they actually decide, all right, we're going to suspend you for games, or that's going to be a penalty of some kind. If you, when you do test positive in the NBA, you get counseling and they bring you in. So talking about, all right, are you abusing this drug?
And it's really your rookie year, I believe. And once you get through that, testing is...
Their CBA is way different than the NBA. So my point is the NFL was the last to decriminalize marijuana. And it's kind of an antiquated belief system they had about it. I still think to this day they liked their drug policy, because it would decrease the value of certain players. When you do get a positive test, and the NFL is like, oh man, when you come back for a contract negotiation, just so you know, you did have this positive test. Mm-hmm. So it's to them, they use it as a leverage tool, a negotiating tool a lot of times, unfortunately. But the NFL has a really dark recent history with opioids. I'll give you a quick history, because I was doing some of this research, 5-6 years ago. the NFL in 2011, they had their first little dust up with the DEA. And the Drug Enforcement Agency sent the NFL a letter about compliance with the Controlled Substance Act at the time, because there was a lot of reports through lawsuits, basically class action lawsuits, former players suing the NFL, then through depositions, getting these guys on the record. There are a lot of stories about them just prescribing or over-prescribing opioids, painkillers. And we're talking about serious. I'm talking about Vicodin. We're talking about, you know, Toradol. We're talking about Percocet, Ambien, Percocet. I'm talking about serious stuff that if you over-prescribe for someone or they abuse it, they could actually do serious harm to themselves. So in 2011, this, by the way, this comes from the Washington Post, the DEA head of diversion control, he made a presentation at the NFL Combine in 2011 to team doctors. And he told them all about the Controlled Substance Act and, you know, what was legal and what was illegal. And come to find out, most of the NFL doctors at the time were violating the Controlled Substance Act.
Oh, I believe that.
Because you weren't supposed to be taking controlled substances across state lines. You weren't supposed to be prescribing them without a doctor's appointment and, like, an actual evaluation from the doctor. You know, unless you were an actual doctor or a nurse, you weren't supposed to be prescribed them. And apparently they were giving them out kind of like candy and Halloween candy at one point, giving them out on planes, all these crazy stories. So the NFL decided, holy Chicago, we actually are in real trouble here. And that's when the DEA... And they let them pass. They let them actually come up with a compliance plan, because I guess at the time, the NFL may not have known if their teams were violating this law or not. So DEA knows right in 2011 that the NFL's on their radar. The NFL's got to clean up their act. And in 2014, they had another interaction. The federal DEA agents actually showed up at least seven different NFL teams. They won't call it a raid because the NFL wants to call it whatever they want to call it. They call it, they called it general oversight. They weren't targeted. It was just general oversight.
Sounds like
usually the DEA calls them raids. Right. When they just show up at some damn business, they decide, no, we're looking through every damn thing because we don't really trust that you guys are actually following all the laws and the rules and regulations. So they actually raided NFL offices in 2014. That was based off class action lawsuits and depositions that the NFL teams were overprescribing medication and overprescribing opioids and painkillers. That actually came from 1,300 plaintiffs, 1,300 former players who were suing the NFL who had played between 1968 and 2012. And as a result of that litigation, the DEA was informed, oh, there are allegations the NFL is abusing the Controlled Substance Act. So fast forward again. All right. And this time in 2017 is the next interaction the NFL has with the DEA. And this comes from Congress, actually. So the rest of those initiatives, if you will, by the DEA, they really came from civil litigation. There were allegations. This time in 2017, a congressional member, I forgot the congressman's name, he pressured the DEA to look into the NFL overprescribing prescription drugs and transporting them and mishandling them. And they came up with a plan, a compliance plan. This compliance plan by the NFL, they said they would no longer allow team facilities to have opioids on the premises. I don't even know if they actually abide by this compliance plan or not. But according to the NFL's compliance plan with the Controlled Substance Act, no NFL facilities have opioids on the premises. That's what they say. Okay. I don't know. I got to go ask my...
Seems legit.
That's what they say. Since 2017, they claim, because on the road, they were worried about them transporting these opioids and these painkillers, right? Because that's illegal. That's against the Controlled Substance Act. Can't transport those opioids across state lines, the prescribed ones. Well, illegal ones. You can't take those anywhere. But anyway, I digress. Now, on road trips, they have to bring in local physicians to administer prescription drugs and disperse them to players. So when the Houston Texans travel to Dallas or travel to Jacksonville, there will be a Jacksonville doctor or a Dallas doctor that will prescribe them.
So even Dallas, legal. Even if it's in the same state?
Yeah, sometimes, because you're right, same state, different state. Okay. So see, right, within Dallas, it's probably same thing, but different state,
but still,
state lines. Yeah. So if he goes to a different state, then they have to actually have a doctor from that state prescribe the drugs. So it should be a state-to-state thing. So that was the last time on the record the NFL has had an issue with the DEA. And I believe a lot of this pressure from the DEA and having to deal with this every few years or so, and the fact that the NFL can't really regulate it with all 32 teams. They can't guarantee that every team is going to make sure everything is buttoned up as relates to the Controlled Substance Act. They are looking for now new alternatives to pain management with their players. And I think it's a smart move by the NFL. I don't know how serious they are. The NFL's got a lot of money, guys. They got, I mean, you're talking about a $12 to $15 billion a year business annually. If they wanted to put a ton of money into research for CBD and cannabinoid research as relates to pain management, they could do that. They're holding now this kind of open competition, if you will, between different companies and trying to find out which one of them has the better alternative plan to pain management for players, aside from opioids and aside from prescribed painkillers. Now, we know in this country, opioid usage, opioid abuse is a big deal for the first time in the history of the country in the last 2 years. There have been more people killed by opioid-related overdoses than by guns in this country. Actually, now, for the first time in U.S. history, Americans have a 1 in 96 chance of dying from an opioid overdose. You have a 1 in 103 chance of dying in a car crash.
Wow.
Dang.
That's, you have a 1 in 119 chance of dying in a fall. 1 in 6 of you will die from heart disease or cancer. That's okay. How most people are going to die. But give you a point of how crazy the opioid addiction, opioid epidemic has become in this country. It's killing as many people as guns in this country right now. I mean, the truth is, since, if you look at it, in 2018, 49,860 Americans died from opioid-related overdoses. That's 70% of all ODs in this country are opioid related. And the new type of, I guess the most popular type of synthetic opioid would be fentanyl. And that's what you're seeing a lot there.
They're hearing a lot about that.
You're hearing a lot. Yeah, these are synthetic. Basically, they're not the natural heroin, the poppy seed, the poppy plant opioids you would get. That's heroin, that's morphine, codeine, coming like you can get like straight from the poppy plants, not synthetically made in a lab. Fentanyl is made in a lab. They're making things in a lab now that are 10,000 times more powerful than morphine.
Oh, my God.
And morphine can kill you.
Jeez. Yeah.
And it's called carfentanil, but they can mix that in with designer drugs, and sometimes people have no idea what the hell they're taking and how it's going to react in their system. So, but that's obviously, this is not something the NFL is really worried about. I'm just talking about in this country having that discussion. I'm sure the NFL is thinking to themselves, the last thing we need is people learning about our history with opioid abuse and overprescribing and our history with the DEA.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the NFL actually is trying to clean up their act a little bit, and they're at least right now advocating for alternative pain management options for players, and that's really good. Now, we know marijuana is recreationally legal in 17 states. 33 states use it for medicinal purposes, but I've always said this for a long time. You go look at the science behind CBD research and the actual like science behind the medicinal elements of CBD, you could make a case that the NFL should have put in billions of dollars in research in medicinal marijuana into CBD research and its effects on CTE.
Yes.
Decades ago.
Yes.
I'll throw this out.
Can I say this?
No, go ahead.
There's been so much research. Harvard doctors, it's in Stoner U. Most respected out there.
Ivy League.
Ivy League.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they'd even have to spend that.
They wouldn't.
Just read it.
Team, you know what? These different labs and these different scientific organizations, they would team up with the NFL just to have the NFL as a partner.
Right.
And the NFL probably wouldn't have to pay anything. Just give them support. But here, I read this from Sports Illustrated. This is like from 2015. The U.S. government issued a patent for the use of cannabinoids as an antioxidant and neuroprotectant way back in October of 2003. It was actually a researcher, a Nobel Prize winning biochemist, Julius Axelrod, who was the one that issued the patent for. And basically what it means is, as a neuroprotectant, when you have a head trauma, your neural passageways, they get filled with this plaque because your brain produces this chemical when you do have any type of head injury. That plaque actually can clog up your neural passageways, blocking off parts of your brain, becoming inactive or becoming less active, right? So essentially they've had to describe this, their supercharged CBD. They have basically tested CBD as a neuroprotective and an anti-inflammatory, which will keep head trauma from producing that chemical that will clog up your neural passageways. And that's essentially the science behind the CBD. Dr. Bill Kinney, the chief scientific officer of Canna Life, he said CBD has an amazing amount of potential. Think about this. What if a football player could just take a pill that is non-psychoactive before the game and now have a greater level of protection against brain injury? What could be better than that? That's basically what they're working on right now. To try to get CBD into a form, a consumable form that will also have the medicinal elements for CTE and for other any type of neurological issue. Now, CBD is different from THC, as everybody knows. THC is the psychoactive element. Yes. CBD is the medicinal element. They're just extracting the medicinal element and leaving out the psychoactive element of marijuana.
Right.
So for those who don't know, they're not talking about just smoking weed.
And the actual plant evolved because animals were eating it, and it evolved to contain THC to go with the CBD. The THC would get animals loopy, and they wouldn't eat it again. So it was about keeping your ass around.
Yeah. No, it's
as a plant.
Yeah, yeah. And it balances out actually too. Yep. But no, it's interesting. If the NFL is serious about this, it could be looking at a game changer, guys, in the way they approach long-term health and wellness in the league.
Feels long overdue.
It does, doesn't it?
But great job. Great research.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Good stuff. Hopefully the NFL and other sports leagues continue to be progressive with this matter and actually care about the health of their players.
I don't trust their motives. No. I don't care about motives on this one. Get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. 337-3776 is the Specs text line if you want to chime in here on the Triple Option with RBKD. When we return, for the most part, it was a perfect weekend for Texas Longhorn Athletics. But one thing did happen that did not go the Longhorns' way. A transfer portal target opted to pick a different school. We'll tell you who that is and discuss what it means for the Longhorn football team next. Back here on the Triple Option with RBKD alongside Rod Babers and Kevin Dunn. I'm BK Brad Kellner. Hope everyone had a fantastic weekend, and for the most part, it was a fantastic weekend if you are a Texas Longhorn fan. The baseball team punching their ticket to Omaha for the 37th time. We'll get back into that at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. And the football team had a very, very successful recruiting weekend. A lot of very important recruits for the classes of 2022 and 2023 were on campus, including Arch Manning, the number one quarterback in the country for the class of 2023. And by all accounts, Texas did a great job this weekend, and the Longhorns are very, very much in the mix for Arch Manning. Of course, still a long way to go for his recruitment. But for the most part, a pretty perfect weekend for Texas. There was one thing, though, that did not go the Longhorns' way. It actually happened.
It's not Quidditch season,
yeah,
man.
Oh, how dare
come on.
I.
You think it's Quidditch season right now, dude?
I couldn't tell you when it is. Is that a fall thing?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
All right, that's
well,
what
summer.
I thought.
It's summer.
Okay.
So school's not in, which means they're not playing.
Okay. Come on, man.
Jeez, dude. Have some respect.
National champs, man. Dynasty at one time.
And BK won't play Texas Fight for him.
I play Texas Fight for the sports teams, actually. So, yeah, sorry, Quidditch, you're not getting that. If you can fly on those broomsticks, I will play Texas Fight for you. I'll play any song you want if I see you fly on one of those damn things.
We have said when they start flying on that.
Oh, I'm in. I'm a diehard.
That's
when
the sport's going to blow up.
I'm in.
That's when it's going to become
all about it.
Season tickets. I'm putting down my deposit right now.
Right.
If that's a thing. Well, the bad news for Texas is football related, and this actually dropped right after we got off the air on Friday.
Oh, no.
Tulsa cornerback Caleb Evans, who is a transfer portal target for Texas, He actually took a visit here to Austin a couple of weeks ago. Caleb Evans announced via Twitter that he is committing to Mizzou, the University of Missouri, landing the commitment from the Tulsa corner transfer, Caleb Evans, who was one of the top 50 players left in the transfer portal, according to our friends at 24/7 Sports. So this would have been a good get. Texas was one of the final five schools for Caleb Evans. Notre Dame was in the mix as well. I think Texas Tech was there too. But Caleb Evans decides to go to Mizzou. Maybe not a huge surprise because apparently Evans's former cornerback coach at Tulsa is now on the staff at Mizzou. So you've got a pre-existing relationship right there. But
I was hoping it was a bad one. That's one of those where if it's a good one, he's gone.
Yeah.
May not be a good one.
Apparently it was a good enough
apparently
one
it was.
For Evans to go to Mizzou over Texas. So, guys, it would have been nice. You know, you've got DeShawn Jameson and Josh Thompson who have started a number of games here at Texas. You've got Darian Dunn, of course, the grad transfer from McNeese State, and KD's cousin already here as well.
Slower one.
You know, we've talked about it a lot. It just, I mean, those guys weren't that good last year, number one. But beyond those guys, Rod, just not a lot of proven commodities at corner. It would have been nice to get a guy with some college experience under his belt, but not to be. So where are you at right now? Do you think Texas needs to look at another transfer portal option at corner, or do you think they can get by with the guys that they have?
I think they can get by with the guys they have right now. I believe they were looking, because I believe Caleb Evans has 2 years. He had 2 years of eligibility remaining. I know that gets all convoluted with the, you know, the new rules and the COVID year and all that kind of stuff. But
there are a lot of seniors on this team, so you're thinking.
Yeah, there are a lot. Gotcha. Darian Dunn last year, DeShawn Jameson last year, Josh Thompson last year. So I think they were looking for the foreseeable future and looking for a guy that can help them out this year with depth and maybe compete for the starting job next year. Hell, if you're really good, compete for it this year. But I think we all pretty much believe it's going to be DeShawn Jameson, Josh Thompson, and then maybe, you know, Darian Dunn thrown in there if they need him. So, yeah, I think they were looking for it for next year because they don't want to have to start over from scratch in the secondary. Look at the young guys in the secondary playing corner after Josh Thompson, Darian Dunn, and DeShawn Jameson leave. Man, it's unproven commodities. It's inexperience. And in the Big 12, I don't care how good you are, unless you're Derek Stingley, who, by the way, we saw him get torched in the SEC a lot as a young corner. Mm-hmm. It just happens. You're going to get beat as a young corner. And I don't know if Texas wants to have that type of rebuilding in the secondary. You would like to have some bridges that can bridge that year from a very senior-led group this year in terms of the corners to next year. You're probably going to have, I don't know, sophomores who have no starting experience there.
I think Rod nailed it right there. So if you are that good and you win it this year, you win it this year. And obviously we're very happy to take you because we needed you. I'm still a little worried about what this room's going to look like. I think their schemes are going to help them out a little bit. And we know Jameson has some ball hawking skills in him. But a lot like we've talked about, like with this Texas baseball team going back to 2019, even though they got 17 games in last year. Well, what I've seen is not that impressive. So hopefully these guys have made serious improvements and that can happen.
Yeah, some of the other corners on this roster right now, Keaton Crawford, who got rave reviews from this coaching staff.
I've heard
this
good things
spring
about him. Yeah.
Today, Baron Jameer Johnson or some of the other corners. But like y'all said, unproven commodities. And odds are you're going to need more than three corners this year.
Yeah.
Like obviously, you lose all three of those guys after this year, but and someone might get hurt or, you know, if a guy keeps getting burned, you want to have somebody else to go to just in case. And that's why I think Texas should keep looking at another transfer portal option just to make sure.
The longer you go without getting what you want in the transfer portal, at this point in the season, I don't know how much talent is hitting the portal at corner at a premium position.
There's not a lot there.
There's not a lot. So he might have been your best option to upgrade in the portal at corner. Now, do you just want to take a guy to take a jag and take a body?
No.
I wouldn't want to do that.
No.
I'd rather give the young guy a shot if I'm just going to take a guy who I believe doesn't have a high ceiling as a Keaton Crawford.
There is one guy I'll mention, and I don't know if Texas is in the mix. I've got to do some digging, but a guy by the name of Caron Prunty actually played at Kansas last year. He was a freshman All-American. Very good, very solid player at KU last year, and would draw a lot of number one assignments in the Big 12. He's in the portal. I know he took a visit to South Carolina this weekend. I don't know how high Texas is on his board or vice versa, but he's a guy with some college experience and a guy who's played and played pretty well in this conference.
And
Three years of eligibility left?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I had read he's the best guy in their secondary. Take that for what it's worth. But you are very objective and know that team. He could play here?
He could play here. I mean, I don't know. I don't think he'd be a penciled in starter right away, but I would feel better about him versus any of the unproven young guys that Texas has.
Interesting.
Just because I've seen him and I haven't seen our guys.
Yep.
But we'll see. So that's a name to maybe keep an eye out for. I'll try to do some like digging out there and see if Texas is on his radar.
Horns 247, not Horns, but 24/7 Sports has a transfer portal ranking, actually. So I'll go check out their transfer portal ranking.
There is a Mizzou corner, too, that I know. I don't think he's that good, but maybe an option, like a guy with some high major college playing experience. Yeah. So there are a couple of guys still available. But, yeah, the question is, number one, are they upgrades over what Texas has now? Number two, do they want to come to a place where they're not going to start? They're going to be at least, at best, fourth on the depth chart.
Yeah.
So do they want to come here for that? And usually guys enter the portal because they want to play.
They want to play right now.
So, yeah. We'll see what happens. There's the one bit of bad news for Texas.
They don't want to play and they just want to come here and party. That's been one of the issues we've talked about, too.
Yes,
it's like there's no win there.
He's coming here as a grad transfer for his last senior year to party it up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to play? That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. Those are the guys we're not looking for.
What about
for.
Practice?
They don't want that either. They don't want that either.
What you talking about? Practice, man.
There it is. So one little demerit on what was a pretty damn perfect weekend for Texas. We'll get back to the positive stuff, though. Back to baseball. What a weekend it was for David Pierce and company at the Dish. And more conversation from the big recruiting weekend it was for Texas football, including a great impression that the staff reportedly left on Arch Manning and his family. It's next.